Hi, Dan.
Hello, Jason.
We're recording this on a Thursday.
What? I resign.
We've outfoxed our master calendar. Or are we doing its bidding by doing this a day early?
I think calendar sees all.
Well,
knows
all.
Knows all. Schedules all.
Mm-hmm. It's true. All hail.
Yeah.
So we think we're getting away with something. We're not getting away with anything.
No, nothing.
We're still doing a podcast.
True enough.
Busy week. There's a lot of stuff going on the site. I posted about sea shanties. You posted about fitness.
I appreciated the sea shanties thing because it got a Sea of Thieves mention, which is a game I really enjoy.
I know that.
And it made me, all the sea shanty talk has made me want to go back to playing that game because it's been a while since I've played it. So perhaps a pirate's life is for me.
Perhaps so. It's good. I always thought that was a fun idea for a game.
A fun game. It's a really fun game. It's very cute.
Yeah, I like it. I like that idea. You know, Jamie is taking a class about pirates in college this year. Yeah.
That's cool.
I'm wondering what pirate facts she's going to be able to impart on us.
That sounds like a podcast waiting to happen.
We did show her CGP Grey's pirate videos before she left here because I said, look, this is an interesting thing about pirates. And it is, I think. So I don't know what they're going to, you know, this sounds like one of those classes that a lot of people sign up for and say, yeah, I'm taking a class about pirates. And then they like get to the first lecture and they're like, oh, it's still a college class. I have to do work.
We're going to learn about pillaging or something.
Yeah, but it's, well, I mean, Gray's video makes the point that pirates are, the economics of pirates are very specific and interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's interesting too. It's not just, you know, yo-ho, pirate's life for me, although it could
Sure.
A lot of economics in Sea of Thieves, right?
That's true. Yeah, there's a lot of digging up coins and a lot of spending those coins and a lot of hunting down magic skeletons, you know, like any pirate.
As you do.
Yeah. There is also, you can do they have things where you have to, like, ship things to places in certain amounts of time, which is by far the most boring of the quests I always find, especially because they have, like, time limits and stuff on them. And a lot of times it's, like, catch these animals and deliver these animals to this place. And I was like, I just don't want to have to manage a bunch of animals in crates. That's just, it's too much work. I'd rather just go dig up treasure. That's what I'm here for.
I didn't sign up to be a pirate to chase chickens around.
Exactly. 100%.
Right.
Totally true.
I wrote my Macworld column this week about the 12-inch MacBook. And I know that you and I have gone back and forth about this because we both had 11-inch MacBook Airs.
Yep.
And I remember when they came out with a Retina MacBook Pro and you were like, Retina MacBook Air. No, I don't. With the 11 and the, can I hold out for, and then you've taken a plunge with Apple Silicon, or are you still waiting?
You know, that's, have I taken the pledge
have
of
you?
Apple Silicon?
Yeah,
I have my M1.
You do. Yeah, you did. I couldn't remember whether you had caved or whether you were like,
no, I did. I bought one when it was announced. Literally.
Okay. It was announced. That was the moment you couldn't wait any longer.
I was well past time. I love my 11-inch Air, but it was really starting to drain.
Yeah, yeah. So this is my point, is I told you when the Retina Air first came out in 2018 that it was kind of in between, right? And so in writing this story, I did the math of, you know, because it's been 3 years, 2+ years. And it's, you know, the Retina Air is as wide as the 11, right? Mm-hmm. It's got that. It's whatever, 30 centimeters. It's as wide as the 11. But it is halfway between the 11 and the 13 in terms of depth. And it is closer to the 13 than the 11 in terms of weight. And that helped quantify my understanding whenever I use the M1 MacBook Air. It's like, you know, I don't dislike the size like I disliked the old size. But
right.
It's also not as pleasant as the 11. And I picked up the 12-inch MacBook that we do have in the house the other day. And I was like, oh yeah, right, yeah, this is it. So I plugged in all those numbers too. And it's like the 12-inch MacBook is also deeper because of the screen layout, also deeper than the 11-inch MacBook Air. But, you know, it is, it's got width to give, and it's 2 pounds.
Right.
And
weight makes a big deal.
It does. It does. It really
Not
does.
That the 13-inch MacBook Air is heavy, but it is definitely, you know, noticeably heavier than an 11-inch.
Yeah.
Like, I picked up the 11-inch again when I had to look up something, and I was like, ooh, this is so light.
Yeah, I think, you know, 0.8 pounds or whatever really does matter, and I think that added depth and the added width, like, there's width to give. That's the bottom line, is even though it's narrower than the old 13, and it's as narrow as the 11, there's width to give there, and the 12-inch shows it, and I'm yelling into the wind here, because Apple's going to do what it's going to do, but I wanted to make the case again, which is, like, I feel like there's room for another laptop in Apple's line that's smaller, because the MacBook shows it. The 12-inch MacBook is probably roughly, I mean, we know fanless, the MacBook Air is now fanless, right? So a fanless design will work fine. And there's not a lot of room in there, but we know the size of the motherboard that's in the MacBook Air. There's not a lot of room needs to be in there. Like, so they're not
mostly battery.
It's mostly battery, right? Like, and they're not, and they designed the two keyboards for the iPad and for the laptops. Like, I think they figured out, like, how to make a really thin Magic Keyboard. So anyway, I laid it out there, and what was funny is, more than most of the Macworld columns I write, I've gotten really nice response from a whole bunch of people who are like, yes, 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 I keep saying this. Because there are a bunch of people who love that 12-inch MacBook. And, I mean, I keep thinking, imagine if that 12-inch MacBook just suddenly was an M1. Like, it would be so great.
Right. I mean, we all speculated that that's what was going to happen. Like, that was one thing on the table, I think, when we were discussing the Apple Silicon transition. It was like, well, that 12-inch MacBook sure seems like in a perfect place for it, because all the stuff that the M1 chip has now delivered is stuff that were essentially weaknesses with the Intel-based version of the 12-inch, right? As you point out in your piece, like, you know, the 12-inch only had one port, and it had terrible chips in it because they were intended to run really cool. And it's like, well, the M1 solves both of those problems. It has a controller for two, and it can run power efficiently with no fan, and does performance-wise way better than the Intel chip that was in the 12-inch. So it kind of seems like that's a perfect marriage there. And I don't know, maybe there's something still up Apple's sleeve. I don't think we've seen, you know, as we've discussed in the last few weeks, everything they've done so far has just been like a straight, you know, copy paste essentially of the existing product line. So, you know,
no
judgment from that on what the future could hold.
And it's laying right out there, right? This is the rare Apple design that has been discontinued in the last few years. Mm-hmm. And so it's sitting out there, and did they just decide it was a bad idea? Or I have a hard time believing that Apple, with all of its prioritization of thinking that the ultimate form of laptops is thin and light, would look at the 12-inch MacBook design and say, we shouldn't make this now that we have the M1, especially because, like, it's the obvious time to do it. So that's what I'm hoping, is that first things first, you know, get these products out there, but that we will see something that is kind of a revamped take on this down the road. And what I said in the piece is, call it the 12-inch MacBook Air. We've got three different models, two different sizes of MacBook Pro. Call it the 12-inch MacBook Air if you like. If you think that the Air is the right designation for this thing, which I think they would rather not call it that. But remember, there was that whole thing where they tried to kill it and they didn't. Yeah. And then they brought it back, and they had to keep the name to say, see, it's the thing. Well, you know,
there's a strong argument for it too, I think, if you look at the iPhone lineup, right? Like, adding the iPhone 12 mini. So you have, like, the 12 mini and the 12, and then the 12 Pro and the 12 Pro Max. Like, there is a, you know, prior art, as it were, for, well, here we've got two sizes of MacBook Air and we've got two sizes of MacBook Pro. And there you go. Right. Like,
exactly.
Have at.
Exactly. So I'm still crossing my fingers there, and would I be into that 12-inch model? Absolutely. I would. I'd start planning on rolling down my M1 Mac 13-inch Air to Lauren, probably to a family member for certain, and then be like, and I'm getting the 12-inch.
Yeah, I would consider selling this M1 MacBook Air on if there were an option for a lighter one, but it's not. I'm also not in dire need right now, since the again, virtue of the 12 inch is it's great for traveling.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So for the moment, I will survive with the 13 inch MacBook Air, and it'll be fine.
Right. So, what was your Fitness Plus experience like? You wrote about that this week.
I did. Yeah, I've been using it for the last few weeks. My wife has actually been using it a lot too, and she's actually way more into it than I am. And I think she really enjoys it because she has done some other fitness stuff in the past, and what she loves about it is it takes a very Apple approach to it, which is realizing that this is something that needs to appeal to a broad base of consumers. And if you look at stuff that's often from like a competitor, whether it be something like Peloton, where it's like, well, you know, it's accessible, but it's also expensive because you need to invest in the hardware for it. Or if you look on the other side at something like, you know, Nike's got some stuff, both their Run Club and their Fit Club or something like that, where it's got like sort of, you know, exercises you can do led by people. I think that one tends to be much more aimed at people who are already kind of athletic, whereas Apple's like, look, we have to appeal to everyone. And so, you know, having stuff where it's like, here's the exercise we're doing, and if you follow along with that person, you know, back there, they have some adjustments that you can make if you are finding that you're not quite ready for the like main level of exercise, if you're mobility limited, if you're injured, if you are just, you know, don't have the strength it needs to do something or the flexibility it needs to do something yet. And that's really smart because I think it makes it much more welcoming. Like, as anybody who's ever gone to a gym knows, it can be super intimidating if you are not somebody who is used to going to a gym and working out. Just the idea of like sort of getting thrust into something where you're out of your element, I think is intimidating. And so they do a great job of making it very welcoming and very you know, appealing to people of all levels of skill. So that's the great part about it, I think, is that they really have made it accessible in every sense of the word. It still needs some work as a product, right? It's a 1.0, and I think watching how Apple improves their services is going to be interesting, right? Because at the moment, we've seen them roll out a bunch of services, and then sometimes they improve these things as they go along, both in terms of like, say, content, for example, right on like Apple TV Plus or Apple Arcade or something like that. But these are also products that have like mechanics to them, right? They have to work in a certain way. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they continue. Like, do they believe this product's great? All we need to do is just keep adding more workout classes and everyone will love it. Or do they realize there's actually some features that are missing in here where we could probably make this a better experience?
Right.
So, you know, some of the stuff that we've run into is like there's a limiting criteria for filtering classes, right? Like you can filter stuff by duration or trainer or type of workout, but you can't yet filter stuff by, say, like, is this a core workout? Is it an upper body workout? Is it a leg workout, et cetera, which could be something that's handy. We've had a lot of friction with interrupting workouts, which I think is something that is not necessarily the most robust. Yes, you can pause workouts and then resume them, but if your watch loses connection with the device, which I have seen happen, it's very frustrating because you have to start all over again. There's no way to just like, you know, we're used to like watching a movie and it's like, oh, I had to walk away and I left the app and whatever, like it doesn't matter. It saved my place. If you walk away and it doesn't, you know, it crashes or it just, you know, gets disconnected or whatever, it doesn't like you don't go in and see like that progress bar halfway through a workout or something like that. And that feels like a point of friction that is definitely frustrating because if you're in the zone and you're like, you know, halfway through a 45-minute workout and the doorbell rings and you're flustered and you run over or whatever and it loses connection or it keeps going without you because you forgot to pause and all of a sudden you can't back up, you can't go forward, that seems like a really kind of frustrating experience.
I was thinking about that what struck me about it is that there's so much that it doesn't it doesn't take advantage of being on a computer, right? Mm-hmm, like that's the thing, that other than like the health stuff
display, right? Which right, it's not even doing anything with that, it's just showing it to you,
right? Other than that, it is a Jane Fonda VHS tape in a way. Yeah. There are a library of them and they're good, and again I think it's a good service too, and I was impressed with it when I tried it. We've had good weather here, so I've just been running, and I haven't been using it, which one of these days it's going to rain, maybe, and I'll do it. That's where I feel like they could really do some very fun innovation, and clearly this is just I hope they view it as a 1.0 on the tech side, because that's exactly what I'm thinking is, yes, there's absolutely stuff like having to pause and come back to where you were in the workout and stuff that you got to be able to do that stuff. But I also start to think about branching, like I'd like the ability, and I know, you know, it's complicated and how they shoot it is complicated. It adds complexity, but it also adds a lot of functionality to say, I want to extend my workout. Right. Or I want to shorten my workout and have it sort of like seamlessly drop you into a different part or insert a portion in order to expand your workout because you want to go a little longer have it look at your stats and adjust you to a different workout because of what your stats read. Like there's a lot of potential here for more like I'm using computer technology and can detect things and based on your needs or your current status do different things. And I hope that's where they go because that's really, really, really interesting and takes advantage of the format, but I get that they have to walk before they run.
Or
they got to stretch first, stretch beginner. Before you even start.
But I think you're totally right. I mean, like, look at the Apple Watch is such a powerful piece of health technology, and I feel like it does so much more that could be leveraged by Fitness Plus. I point out in my piece, like, for example, it gives you those metrics, but it doesn't really give you any context about those metrics. Like, is your heart rate where it should be for a workout? And like, that's stuff that it can know because it has your height and your weight and your age and your gender, right? Like if you put all that in the health app, it knows that, right? So it should be able to calculate that kind of stuff. But like you said, if you need to go harder or you need to, take it easier or you want to go longer need to end quickly. Yeah.
It should be able to suggest a range too. That's the thing that I know I mentioned this before that like I know from running what my heart rate range is. I know what a resting rate is. I know what a kind of just motoring along rate is. And I know what I am at my limit. This is the most stressful part of my range. And, not everybody knows that, but it should be able to look at your data and make a guess and have you choose. Because that would actually be really helpful if it knew what my range was and I put it in there. Because then it could, even if it's not the instructors, but even if it's just the app overlay saying, work harder or you're doing good or whatever, but it doesn't do any of that stuff now either. So this is all part of the...
Exactly.
It's 1.0, but this is the stuff that I want to see them add going forward.
The other thing I think it would actually really benefit is a more sort of holistic program. I mean, like lots of people do stuff like Couch to 5K, right? And, that has a certain format to it and it has a progression. And right now, there's not much in the way of progression. They have their absolute beginner workouts, which are great. I did several of them just to sort of see, like, how am I really an absolute beginner? Should I be doing these to start out? And they're super welcoming, which is again fantastic. But there's not a ton of indication about where to go from there. They talk about like, you can keep coming back to this one or you can move up to this one. But like, it would be nice to have something that takes sort of a more, a 10,000 foot view of like, I want to do X. My goal is run a 5K or my goal is to be able to do this many push-ups or my goal is to be able to lift this amount of weight or whatever and help you build more of a progression or more of a, workout plan. I think that's something not everybody would be into that, but I think there are a lot of people who would like that idea. And it sort of works well with the, I hate to say it, but like some of the gamification stuff on your watch, even, right? Where you've got goals and stuff like that. They're like, get a streak or, do this kind of workout or et cetera. Like, I think there's a lot of stuff it has not leveraged yet. And the other thing I mentioned is social. Like, there's very little social interaction whatsoever.
Right.
And that might be fine for some people, but at least, there is something compelling about that. I think if you talk to people who use Peloton, for example, and really like it, one of the things they enjoy about it is that there is a social aspect to it. And Fitness Plus doesn't really have that right
now. And you have activity, workout buddies already on Apple Watch. So it's it's not like you couldn't work that stuff in. It's just that it's not. I mean, the bottom line is it's just not there. They spent a lot of time building
the foundation.
The 1.0 software side and the content and the content is good, and the 1.0 software side is functional. It's just that it's very easy to look at this, and kind of fun, actually, for something that's this brand new, and say, you have so many places that you could improve this product, like, in a good way. Like, you didn't build this thing fully formed. It works as it is, but like there's so many interesting
there's so much
places you can go
there. Yeah, and I think that's fundamentally a lot of the tension with services for Apple, right? Like, because you can envision a world where they're like, look, we got people paying $10 a month for this. We're just gonna sit back and rake it in, right? Like, there's a lot of services where that seems like you could kind of just go on forever. And where is, if you're not convincing people to say, buy a thing, right? Like go out and buy a new laptop or buy a new phone because you've improved it in this way. You know, how do you continue to draw in more subscribers? Is it worth you spending the time improving these things? And I suppose a lot of that depends on, like, you know, what their target is for this service. But it is, I think, a challenge with Apple shifting to more and more revenue from services as opposed to products that people go out and buy. It's a different dynamic.
Yep, for sure. So is AirTags finally going to happen?
You know, I'm starting to think that it was fairly imminent given all the stuff that's come out. But I honestly, you know, fool me once. Shame on you.
Yeah.
Fool me six or seven times. Definitely shame on me. I don't know. It was weird to read that story yesterday where they're like, hey, if you go to your browser on your phone and type in this, you know, find my ... items or whatever, it'll open Find My app and pop up an interface for adding an AirTag. And, you know, I think we talked about this a little bit on Clockwise this week. And I think what's interesting about it is that clearly the software pipeline on this is so far along, right? It's been in the OS for more than one like, I think since iOS 13, there were stuff that was leaking out there. So it seems like it doesn't seem like an AirPower situation where they're like, oh no, we just cannot get these things to work. Because I feel like when iOS 14 rolled around, they probably would have stripped the code out if it's like, no, this is we're not going to ship this. It's not going to work. But it seems like they actually kept working on it. So to the sort of most charitable explanation, I think, is it probably wasn't quite ready when iOS 13 shipped. And they're like, well, maybe we'll, you know, add it in a point release or something like that, or release it halfway through 2020. And then 2020 happened. And
yeah.
They're like, well, why bother right now? And so it's just kind of lingering in there waiting for them to decide, yeah, we can pull the trigger on it now.
Yeah, now is the
and
time
I'm not
for
sure
tracking
tags. Yeah. I'm not sure that's a bad thing, because this is not unlike, say, a phone where it's like, well, we have to release this because we can't turn around next year and be like, here's last year's phone. The tracking tags, no technology within those will fundamentally change from last year to this year. I don't think that there's anything so cutting edge in there that they're going to be like, oh, we should go, like, this is using the old version of a chip, or it's a slower, you know, processor or whatever, right? It's fundamentally a bunch of radio chips and a battery. I don't think any of that's going to be a big deal. So I think that actually is a device they can sit on and decide
as long as
to
they
release
need to
whatever they want. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's
and
also
I think,
some speculation that they did decide to put in the extra work, perhaps to avoid some legal encumbrances, to make it an API that anyone could use instead of it just being exclusive to them. Because
sure.
There was, you know, Tile has sued them and all of that. But they, you know, now there is a Find My API, and it sounds like this will be the banner product, but that other products can use it too.
Right. Or that it's something where it's like, well, you know, we might as well take the extra time to get all the kinks out, basically.
Right.
If we're not releasing
there's
it
no rush to do this product, because most of its demand is going to be for people who are going places and doing things, and nobody's doing that now. So,
well, we did have an interesting email, which I thought we should address, because I thought
it has
its upsides and downsides to this point, which is, what are the privacy concerns with this? And there's a couple different angles of that, because one is, we've heard a bunch about how this can essentially leverage almost like a mesh network of Apple devices. So if you lose your, you know, keys and, you know, it's they're outside, right? Like you're in the grocery store or wherever, the park. Other Apple devices that are nearby can sort of anonymously register this, the location of it, right? So like, even if it's not within Wi-Fi range, or, you know, range of a phone connected to a cellular network or something, it can still report its location. And Apple, you know, has done a lot to say, but it's all done anonymously. It's all secured. It's all encrypted so that, you know, you can't use, you can't sort of abuse that system. But the email that came to us from a reader was sort of a more low-tech thing. It's like, what's to prevent somebody from slipping this in your pocket and tracking your location?
Yeah. Reminds me of all those like spy movies where people like tap pat you on the back, but I've actually put a tracer
tracker on you.
Or Spider-Man has the little spider trackers.
Little spider tracker. I think there's a few things going on here. One, and you know, bear in mind, this product hasn't been announced. We have no idea if Apple has considered this. Knowing Apple's stance on privacy and security, you'd think that it would want to think about that and at least have a story or a bullet point that explains why they don't think that, or why, what prevents this from happening or what have you. I think a couple things do prevent, you know, make it less likely. One, we don't know, again, what these look like, but it's unclear how small they are, right? Like, sure, it may be that somebody could slip it in your coat pocket and you wouldn't notice it for a while, but depending on how large they are, it might still be apparent, you know, if somebody puts it in your pocket, because you stick your hands in your pocket and you're like, what is this?
What the heck is this?
Not to say you could not find ways to secrete it or what have you. I think that one of the other issues is that... Is this an additive problem or sort of a substitutive problem, right? Like, because you're already carrying around so many devices that track your location no matter where you go. Arguably, in cases, and we've seen this, there's been a lot written about things like domestic violence and stalking using technology and all the considerations that often haven't been taken into these things. And I think that those, you know, for those who are going to act maliciously in that fashion, those tools kind of exist already, right? Like, if you can get somebody's access to somebody's iPhone for, you know, 5 minutes and it's unlocked, you could add yourself to my Find My Friends list or something, and that might not be noticed for a while either. And then you can track that phone wherever they go, and they may not even know. Like, software can be installed on these phones that tracks location or that reports location. And in some ways, that's even harder to find, right? Like, than a physical object that's been placed on you. But to me, I think the fundamental thing comes down to, I never think that technology enforces people to act illegally or unethically. That to me has always kind of struck me as a spurious argument. Like, it's not as though, you know, it's the kind of the file sharing argument, right? Where it's like, that turned everybody into pirates. And it's like, well, it certainly was commonplace, but saying that that was what made people break the law by stealing things, just that the technology existed, is kind of a, you know, cart leading the horse argument. To my mind, and any more than, as I think the example I gave to you was, like, you can kill a person with a car. Not everybody who drives is just going to decide, hey, today's a great day to run people over.
Right.
I think that's a tougher argument, but it certainly is valid to argue that it will enable or perhaps simplify things for people who are already, you know, committing those kinds of illegal, immoral acts. It may make things easier for them. I don't know. That's where Apple's going to have to find a way to address it.
Yeah, and I would imagine that there will also be a story about the fact that if you do something like this, you basically have made a digital trail of you doing it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's going to be tied to your ID, right?
Right.
So although that's not necessarily a solution to, you know, it's illegal, and it would also be very easy to prove that you did it.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, is that enough? Because it doesn't always get to the point where there's legal things involved. But I would think that that would be part of the reason that somebody would be dissuaded from doing it, is that not only should the law dissuade you from being a stalker, but also you're literally signing into your Apple ID and making a whole data trail of this tracker that you slipped into that person's pocket.
Yeah, because it's going to have a serial number on it, and you can report that serial number and it'll be associated. Yeah, that's a good point. It's just sort of the accountability of it, hopefully, is something that dissuades people from thinking this is a good idea.
Right. Yeah, maybe there's a, I don't know whether there's a way to you can put in the code somewhere and see who it belongs to or something like that, like if you find one, because the part of it is what is the found item behavior, because if you truly lose it, you may know where it is, but somebody's going to find it. And on an iPhone, if you put it in lost mode, you get a message and a phone number and all of these things. With an AirTag, is there something like that? Is there a button you can push or a number you can put in somewhere? I don't know. I appreciated the email because it's always worth considering ramifications of new technology, sure. Right? Not that this technology is particularly new, but it's a new wrinkle on it that has this potential for like low-grade spycraft used by creepy stalkers.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, no, I'm very curious to see how this product pans out, because even as you're describing the loss behavior, it's like, well, it could be, I mean, if it's got like little wireless chips in it, you could hold your phone over it and it could be like, hey, you found this object. Would you like us to contact right. the person who it belongs to? And then they can decide whether or not they want to like share their contact info or what have you.
Right.
I think this could be done very cleverly in a way that, you know, certainly for protecting privacy of just the standard use case of attaching it to items, I think Apple is capable of handling that in a very discreet, private, you know, privacy maintaining manner. But it will be interesting. I mean, yeah, it's someday when we see this product, sometime in the next year, probably.
And they never released AirTags.
Oh boy.
All right. Well, we'll be back next Friday, right? Are you going to be here next Friday? Can we try?
I don't think I'm going anywhere next.
Okay. Well, then we'll be back next Friday. And surprise, it was a Thursday episode. Now you have to wait 8 days because we've earned our 1 day of respite from calendar. Thank you to everyone for subscribing to Six Colors. We appreciate it. And bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.